Welcome to sermon audio from Grace Hill Church in Pittsboro, North Carolina. I'm Lee Callicutt, pastor for preaching and teaching at Grace Hill. Grace Hill Church exists to glorify God by being a community on mission transformed by the gospel. For more information about Grace Hill, visit us at gracehillchatham.com.
I want to start off with a bit of a riddle this morning. What do dead flies, poisonous snakes, leaky roofs, and talking birds have in common? Because that is our passage before us. Can you make the connection between dead flies, poisonous snakes, leaky roofs, and talking birds? Now, it might sound like strange characters and events from a fairy tale or maybe a nightmare, but they're not. They're right here in our passage. And there are unexpected teachers this morning. Let me introduce you to them once more. Dead flies floating in a jar of expensive perfume, ruining the whole thing. A snake that bites before it's even charmed without warning or purpose. A leaky roof that eventually destroys the whole house. A little bird eavesdropping on your private words and carrying them off to someone else. Odd images, but they all point to the truth that Solomon wants us to see today. And perhaps I didn't give you enough time to make the connection this morning, but nonetheless, what do dead flies, poisonous snakes, leaky roofs, and talking birds have in common? What do they teach us? And to front load and to tell you what they teach us instead of keeping you in limbo is this: how frail wisdom actually is, and how quickly foolishness can ruin it. The main idea in one sentence that I'm going to repeat throughout the sermon is this: the greatest achievements of wisdom can be undone by the smallest display of foolishness. The greatest achievement of wisdom, the greatest achievements of wisdom can be undone by the smallest displays of foolishness. But before he gets to the teachers of the passage this morning, he actually starts us off with a parable to set the stage, to teach us how foolishness can undo wisdom. You see that in verses 13 of chapter 9 all the way through chapter 10, verse 1. And we see he has this parable to teach us that foolishness does undo wisdom. See in verse 13 here, he says, "I've also seen the example of wisdom under the sun, and it seemed great to me." Now it seems like Solomon is actually reintroducing the theme of wisdom in our passage. But to use a literary device, wisdom is not the main character in our passage this morning. It is more of a foil. It actually stands in contrast, wisdom does, stands in contrast to the main character of our passage this morning, which is foolishness. He introduces wisdom only to show us how quickly foolishness can undercut it. And so he introduces wisdom in verse 13 to show how it contrasts with foolishness. And then he gets into his parable in verse 14. He says, "There's a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, did many siege works against it." So now you can picture this small city with a simple wall around it, not many men, a quiet town, a town with very little defense. And now a great king comes with his massive army and starts to shoot arrows and boulders and spears over the wall and tearing down this small wall. This quiet little town with very little defenses is now seized by a great king and a great army, and destruction is to come to this little city. But look what's discovered in this small little city as this king approaches it. Verse 15, "But in this city there is a poor wise man. And what happens is by his wisdom the city is delivered." Now we have no details on what he did or what he said. The point just remains is that wisdom delivered. And he says, "Yet no one remembered the poor man." It harkens back to chapter 7, verse 19, where it says, wisdom gives strength to the wise man more than 10 rulers who are in the city. Wisdom gives strength. And this poor man, through his wisdom, saves the city. And so he goes on to reiterate that point in verse 16. But I say wisdom is better than might. Right? Wisdom is better than brute strength. Because the poor man's wisdom is despised, his words is not heard. But he says, look, it's still better, even though the wise man was ignored. So what do you expect when this wise man saves a city? You think they build a statue for him, give him the keys to the city, have a day for him. And he saved this city just by his wisdom. And yet they say, look, no one remembers that. No one remembers his wisdom. No one remembers the wise man. In fact, he's ignored now. You see, he goes on in verse 17, the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of the ruler among fools. He's just contrasting the quiet, steady influence of wisdom versus the loud, destructive power of folly. Wisdom doesn't always, verse 17, is basically saying wisdom is sometimes boring. It doesn't always grab the headlines. But wisdom is better than the shouting of fools. And in verse 18, wisdom is better. Now, here's the key here because he's about to turn it. Wisdom is better than the weapons of war. Right? That's how the city was saved. It was through wisdom. But then yet on the backside of it, no one listened to him. He says, but one sinner destroys much good. So verse 18 is a warning that it only takes one sinner, one foolish act, to undo the good that wisdom has built. That all the wisdom in the world can be undone by one act of foolishness. That's what he says. One sinner can destroy much good. And this sets the stage for chapter 10. Solomon is about to show how easily wisdom can be spoiled, not by armies, not by disasters, but by a single fool. The greatest achievements of wisdom can be undone by the smallest displays of foolishness. And so now we get to our very first teacher. Dead flies. Verse 1 of chapter 10, he says, dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. Dead flies, that's the image. Imagine an expensive jar of perfume or oil that's worth a lot of money. This jar of perfume is expensive, a fragrant perfume, ruined by just a few unnoticed flies. Even last night as we were getting ready to go out with my wife and I, our little daughter, I sprayed a little bit of cologne and my little daughter smelled it. She walked up and she said, what is that? She said, Daddy, smells good. And I appreciate that. I don't want to smell bad. But that little bit of cologne, what he's saying is that it can be ruined with just a few dead flies. It wouldn't smell good when the decay of dead flies seeps into that cologne. See, flies seem pretty small and pretty insignificant, but if they were to land in your perfume or in your cologne and then decay, they would actually get absorbed into the ointment, and when you were to spray it or dab it, it would no longer smell good and enticing anymore. It would actually give off a stench. Although those dead flies may not be noticeable at first, their stench will fill the air once of that once fragrant perfume. Small and subtle, the ruin still happens. The once beautiful fragrance becomes putrid and repugnant. See, one small thing can actually ruin something of great value. Remember the lady in Mark 14 that broke the jar of perfume for Jesus? Remember how much that perfume cost her, that ointment cost her? It was a year's worth of wages. So this is something expensive. This is something valuable. And yet, the very thing that was valuable is ruined by a few small dead flies. See, perfume in the ancient world was not trivial, and it could be destroyed, spoiled by something just as small as a dead fly. And in the same way Solomon's making his point, is one act of foolishness can outweigh a lifetime of wisdom and integrity and honor. See, foolishness undoes wisdom. To put it another way, foolishness stinks and can ruin a lifetime of wisdom. The image of verse 1 with the dead flies and the perfume, the point he's making is it doesn't take much It does not take much folly to ruin something beautiful. A single virus can shut down a body. A small spark can set on a forest fire. A single harsh word can ruin a friendship forever. A single reckless decision can leave scars for a lifetime. I mean, have we not seen this? Moses? One moment of anger? One strike of the rock instead of speaking like God instructed? He's not allowed into the promised land. Achan? Taking the spoils of Jericho? Just a little bit for himself. Yet his private sin brought defeat upon Israel. The point? One single sinner, one single foolish act can undo so much. And some want to say, don't judge a man based on his mistakes. Don't judge a man based on a hiccup. But that's not the way the world works. People will see the blemish. It doesn't matter how much of a lifetime of integrity and wisdom we live, one blemish will spoil everything that you have done. Do we need to ask King David about this? What's the first thing we think of with David? Not his wisdom, not the way he led, not even his victories. They are overshadowed by one tragic decision. A moment, a glance. And then the follow through of that glance with Bathsheba. So what is it we think of with when we think of David? Not godly king or ruler, not a man after God's own heart. The first thing most of us think about is not the achievements of his wisdom, but the one great act of folly. See, foolishness, even in small doses, can unravel great wisdom. The greatest achievements of wisdom can be undone by the smallest displays of foolishness. I mean, I must say, this really hits home for me as one who's in pastoral ministry, and I'm sure may hit home for other pastors, is that this. I mean, you think about this. I could build a lifetime of ministry, godly, wise, effective, fruitful ministry for years. And one blow up, one angry outburst, one bad decision, one sideways word can ruin my whole ministry. Or at least ruin it with you. Regardless of how well I minister to you, even perhaps for decades, the reality is one dead fly could make my ministry stink to you. But it's not just ministers that need to be on guard, but you as well. One small mistake, one rash word, one rude remark, one hasty decision, one immoral indulgence, one angry outburst, and what happens? A successful career, down the drain. A 30-year marriage, ruined. A long-standing friendship, gone. A lifetime of ministry, perhaps, undone. All forever marred or even destroyed by a moment of foolishness. Here's the moral of the story. The greatest achievements of wisdom can be undone by the smallest displays of foolishness. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. So now, it raises a critical question for us. Is I don't want to be that fool. I don't want the foolish act. I don't want the foolish moment. I don't want to undo a lifetime of wisdom and integrity by one bad moment. So now the question is what is this type of foolishness that undoes wisdom? What does it look like? Because I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to do that. I don't want something to unravel my life. What does this foolishness look like? How does it manifest? How can we spot it? And because we can spot it and know what this foolishness looks like, therefore we can avoid it. because I don't want that happening to me. So now he starts to actually give characteristics of this type of foolishness that can undo a life of wisdom. And he actually gives, I'm going to draw out four characteristics of the foolishness that undoes wisdom. And the first one is actually foolishness is strikingly obvious. Verse 2, a wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. Wise people to the right, foolish people to the left. There's a political joke in there. I am not making it. I will refrain. But the imagery nonetheless is wise people to the right, fools to the left. And that comes from the imagery of Genesis 48, where Joseph brings his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, to get the blessing from his father Jacob. And remember, he puts one on the right, one on the left. What does Jacob do? He crosses his hands. The right hand's always done with biblical authority, with blessing, with associated with blessing, authority, and divine favor. Jesus, after his resurrection, seated at the right hand at final judgment. Sheep will be on the right, goats will be on the left. The right signifies righteousness, divine blessing. The left is associated with perversity and divine favor. In fact, even the Latin word that we use in English, sinister, actually means left. So for those like me that are left-handed, we just have to deal with it. But when Solomon says that the heart inclines people to the right and the fool to the left, he's not talking about just geography. What he's saying is the entire orientation or direction of someone's life is different. You can tell if someone's moving this way or that way. He doesn't say they're parallel. He doesn't say they're perpendicular. He says they are diametrically opposed. The wise goes to the right and the fool to the left. Complete opposite directions, blatantly obvious. You can tell where they're heading. And then he says it to make his point again in verse 3. Even the fool, he says, walks down the road. He lacks sense. And he proclaims, he says to everyone as he's walking down the road, I'm a fool. Proverbs 12:23 says, the heart of the fool proclaims his folly. The folly of fools, Proverbs 14:8. The folly of fools is deceiving. In other words, foolishness, your foolishness or mine, when it's on display, is actually a broadcast. It exposes who we are. It doesn't just say the fool claims to be a fool. He exposes himself to be a fool. By walking down the road, he announces to everyone, here I am, a fool. And let's be honest. If you've met a fool before, they ain't that hard to spot. And if you never spotted one, I got some bad news for you. But you can spot a fool by the way that they walk. They don't hide their foolishness. It's on display for the world to see. A fool can't hide his foolishness. It defines what actually is part of being a fool, is that he or she's the only one who doesn't realize how foolish they are and how obvious it is to everyone else. Ecclesiastes 2, the fool is morally blind. Ecclesiastes 4, the fool is lazy. Ecclesiastes 5, the fool doesn't keep his promise. Ecclesiastes 7, the fool is quick-tempered. Ecclesiastes 9, they do not take advice. Foolishness is not hidden. It's loud, it's visible, and it's unmistakably obvious. And then he gives in verses 4 through 7, just a little bit of advice when we come up against a fool. And it's basically this, don't return foolishness with foolishness, is what he tells us in verses 4 through 7. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself, Proverbs 26:4 says. And if a fool comes up against you, remember Proverbs 15:1, that a gentle answer turns away wrath. See, calmness and a measured answer, composed spirit lays to rest great offenses, Ecclesiastes tells us here. He says, even sometimes there's leaders that are foolish. He says, I've seen slaves ride horses and I've seen princes walk on the street. And even if there's a fool in authority over you, he's saying, respond wisely in the face of obvious foolishness. So see, foolishness, the characteristic of foolishness that undoes wisdom is actually that it's obvious. But another characteristic of foolishness that undoes wisdom is that it's ignorantly reckless. Look at verses 8 through 11. Now Solomon describes everyday work activities: digging a pit, breaking a wall, quarrying stones, splitting logs. These are not actually, let me draw out, these are not actually evil actions in and of themselves. Wise and fool alike do these things. But they're actions done without wisdom, without caution. And when they're done without wisdom, without caution, they actually become dangerous. These actions that he describes in verses 8 and 11 are not actually malicious in and of themselves, but they're reckless in the fool's ignorance. So verse 8, he who digs a pit will fall into it. I mean, how foolish do you have to be? You're digging something and then you fall into it. Can't say I didn't know the hole was there. And a serpent will bite him who breaks through the wall. It's like when you're looking underneath some lumber, some wood, or maybe old tin, and you don't bother to sort of pick it up and look for the snake. In fact, we had a couple snakes in our yard this week that I had to dispose of. But when I'm looking under certain things, you know, you want to take your time. You don't want to just rush in and reach your hand down there, or what? You'll get bit. That's what he's saying. A fool just doesn't think sometimes. He says that you can dig a hole, fall in it. You can even be bitten by a snake hiding in the stones. He captures himself by his own carelessness. Verse 9, he says that he quarries stones and he's hurt by them. He splits logs but is endangered by them. This is not just accident-prone behavior. It's self-inflicted harm due to the guy's foolishness. Verse 10, he says, if the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength. But wisdom helps one succeed. You know the old story of the two guys chopping wood at the same time, and one guy takes breaks every few minutes, and one guy just chops away the whole time. And what ends up happening is the guy who was chopping away the whole time gets beaten. They're chopping efforts. And he says, well, what did you do? And the guy said, well, the reason I was taking my breaks is because I was sharpening the axe. That made me work faster. And he's saying, look, there's so many people here that don't use wisdom to go and sharpen the axe. They just sort of blunt force. They don't use wisdom. They're not thinking. The fool just keeps swinging. But wisdom sharpens before striking. Then he goes on. Here's another teacher, the poisonous snake. If a serpent bites before it's charmed, there's no advantage to the charmer. No sense of timing. Just sort of walk right up there and gets bit. See, foolishness is reckless ignorance. And reckless ignorance doesn't just make life harder, it makes life harmful. Obviously, he's using a metaphor here for us. To quote John Wayne, actually, life is tough, but it's tougher when you're stupid. And that's what he's saying here. Solomon makes the point. Foolishness is actually not always malicious rebellion. Sometimes it's reckless ignorance. A careless disregard for the way to do things and the consequences of what you are doing. Ignorance is not always bliss. Sometimes it's foolishness. And ignorance may feel innocent, but Scripture shows us that it can actually bring harm. It can bring broken relationships, personal ruin, or spiritual collapse. That's the point he's making in verses 8 through 11, is that it's not innocent. It actually does bring harm, even if you're ignorant of it. So see, foolishness is not only obvious, it's not only ignorant, but foolishness is actually also confusing. It's disorienting. Look at verses 12 through 15. So now he goes to a words of a wise man. He says, look, verse 12, the words of a wise man's mouth wins him favor, but the lips of the fool consume him. Now in contrast, the fool's words in verse 13, they grow with every breath. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is evil madness. A fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be, right? He don't even know what he's saying. He just starts a sentence and doesn't even know where it's going. He just multiplies words. Who can tell him what will be after him? To quote someone else, as Plato said, a wise man speaks because he has something to say. A fool speaks because he has to say something. So a fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be. He's disoriented. He doesn't know. He's confused himself. And Solomon says it ends up in full-blown madness. But now take a note at verse 15. The toil of a fool wearies him, right? Just wears him out. And then look at this in verse 15. For he does not know the way to the city. He's trying to talk and give direction and multiply his words, and the fool don't even know how to get back home. He can't even find his front doorstep. He keeps talking, often wrong, but never in doubt. And yet, it's not proportional to his understanding. And so in verse 15, he drives the picture home. The fool is so mentally and morally confused and lost that he doesn't even know his way back to his own city, a basic and familiar path. That's how confusing and disorienting foolishness becomes. It talks but has no wisdom. You ever seen a fool try to live life? They don't know which way to go. Ultimately, because they're not grounded in the Word of God. It's disorienting, it's confusing. This section shows us the internal effects of foolishness. See, foolishness doesn't just hurt others, it actually disorients the fool himself. That's the irony of the fool. He talks but has no truth. The fool's so disconnected from reality, wisdom, and truth that even the basic navigation of life is beyond him. So the only cure for this is obviously Jesus Christ, who is the way, who is the truth. Without him, we're all like fools, lost on the most important journey without him. Wisdom begins when we stop pretending we know the way and follow the one who does. See, foolishness is obvious, foolishness is ignorant, foolishness is confusing. But the foolishness that undoes wisdom is also, it is destructive. He goes on in verses 16 through 20. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. He's like, look, there's leaders here that are destructive. They feast in the morning. They get drunk in the morning. They don't even care about what the day is like. They have no concern. They have no direction. And he contrasts it in verse 17. Happy are you, O land, when your king is the son of the nobility and your princes feast at the proper time. Nothing wrong with feasting. A feast at the right time. And they feast for strength, not for drunkenness. Now, we're going to return to verse 18, but take note of it real quick. Though through sloth, the roof sinks in, and through indolence, the house leaks. And then he says, bread is made for laughter, wine gladdens life, and money answers everything. Even in your thoughts, do not curse the king, nor in the bedroom curse the rich. For a bird will carry your voice or some winged creature to tell the matter. What he's saying here in verses 16 through 20 is that, yes, there's foolish leadership, laziness and neglect can ruin anything. We aren't to have self-indulgent attitudes. And by the way, you need to be really careful what you say, because here's another teacher. This old bird in the sky, the old saying, the little birdie told me, is a poetic way of saying that your words travel way further than you think. And it's the fool that's loose with his words to other people. Careless speech, especially against rulers, can bring ruin and destroy much. He's saying your foolish words can destroy more than you think. Slander and gossip is the vocabulary of fools. Here's the point he's making. Is foolishness, in verses 16 through 20, foolishness doesn't actually stay isolated. It always spreads and then destroys. Just like the little bird who carries your words to the king, it doesn't stay with you. And just like in verse 18, the roof that sinks in through sloth, through laziness, through a lack of wisdom. You know, a leaky roof is about the worst thing for a home. A lot of people would actually say that the roof is the most important part of your house. Without a solid roof, everything else will eventually be destroyed. Think about deferred maintenance. Imagine a house that's once beautiful, once well built, and over time, small issues start to appear, one of which is a leak in the roof. You know, when we first bought our new home there in Silcote, we had to replace the upstairs windows because they were leaking. If we did not replace those windows, it would have destroyed the subfloor and the top of and the second floor, and it would have leaked down and destroyed the first floor. So now imagine what happens if you don't address those leaks. You get mold in the bathroom, it destroys flooring. And the owner perhaps even notices it and says, what? Well, I'll fix it later. But months go by and then years. And the leak now becomes water damage. The windows fall out. The mold spreads. And now eventually the whole structure is compromised. And the house begins to fall apart. All because of one small leak. Because foolishness is never isolated. It always spreads. And when it spreads, it's destructive. If we don't heed to wisdom and wise course of actions over time, foolishness spreads. It will destroy yourself. It will destroy your family. It will destroy your church. And it will destroy culture. So foolishness that undoes wisdom is destructive. Foolishness that undoes wisdom is ignorant and reckless. It's obvious. And so, we come back to this. What does dead flies, a poisonous snake, a leaky roof, and a talking bird have in common? What's the connection? Is that foolishness, even in small doses, like a leaky roof or a bite from a snake or just some dead flies in a perfume, can have devastating effects. The disproportionate power of foolishness. The greatest achievements of wisdom can be undone by the smallest displays of foolishness. And here's the thing is you don't have to be a fool in every way or every day, just once. The wrong time in the wrong place can undo years of integrity and blessing. One act of foolishness can shatter a marriage, fracture a friendship, or wreck a reputation. This is why we must see it and we must recognize it. In the world, in ourselves, and we must not make room for it. We can't make room for just a little folly. Even tolerating a form, or even tolerating a little bit of foolishness, is a form of foolishness. We can't make room for a little folly, or my life will be undone. And here's the thing, we've all had moments of foolishness, have we not? We've all played the fool at some point. Whether reckless behavior, careless words, passive neglect, our lives have displayed marks of folly. So what are we to do? One, thank God for His grace that it perhaps hasn't undone a life of wisdom. But how do we really protect ourselves moving forward to not let a great life of wisdom be undone by one act of foolishness? Well, Jesus actually speaks to this. In Matthew 7, verses 24 through 27, let me read this to you. He says, everyone then who hears, this is Jesus, everyone who hears these words of mine and does them will all be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on the house, but it did not fall because it was founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. What is the only way in this life to not ruin your life with an act of foolishness? What's the difference between wisdom and foolishness? Jesus tells us, We must build our life not on sinking sand, but on the rock of His Word. What's the difference between wisdom and foolishness? It's not just hearing the words of Jesus, but doing the words of Jesus. It's the fool who hears and does not do. Obey, trust, build your life upon Jesus Christ. That's what a wise person does. That's how we live this life, is we actually build our life on the very foundation of wisdom, which is Jesus Christ and His Word. And we are not to be ignorant of what Jesus has done. What has Jesus done for His people? He has come, He has died for our sins, He's carried them away, He's risen from the grave, and now He calls all those to trust and believe in Him. The Bible says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So to first live a wise life is to fear God, and to fear God is to trust Jesus and build your whole life upon what He says and then do it. To not trust and follow Jesus is the height of foolishness. So trust Him, believe Him, build your life upon Him. See, to live without Him is not just risky, it's ruinous. Don't ignore Jesus and be a fool. But come to Him by faith. And you may not understand right now everything that Jesus says, but you can trust what He says is good and wise, and you can come to Him and trust Him in that. Don't build your life on sinking sand. Don't be the fool. Don't be the obvious, ignorant, destructive fool. Be wise and let Jesus show you the way. Come to Him by faith. See, that's the hope of the gospel. Is God hasn't left us in our foolishness. In fact, the words of the cross is folly to those who are perishing. But to those who are being saved by it, it is the wisdom and power of God. So what the world might say is wisdom, if it's not in alignment with Jesus, is foolishness. Trust in Jesus. The words of the cross is folly to those who are perishing. But to those who have life, it is wisdom and power. Jesus Christ, the only true, perfect, wise man, took our place. He bore the consequences of our folly and died the death we deserve. On the cross, the wisdom of God paid for the foolishness of man. God forgives us, He makes us new, and then He sets our feet on solid ground. And we can now walk in true wisdom, not by our strength, but by the Spirit who gives us understanding and joy. So here's the invitation for anyone not trusting in Jesus Christ right now. It is this: stop trusting in your own understanding, lay down your pride and your foolish independence, and trust Him. The foolish thing for you to do now is not trust in Jesus. Fear the Lord. That's the beginning of wisdom. And build your life on the only foundation that cannot be shaken. Because in Jesus, fools become sons and daughters. Wanderers who can't even find their way home can find it in Jesus, because He shows us the way and the truth and the life. Much of our foolishness can undo a lifetime of wisdom. But Jesus, who is wisdom, undoes all our foolishness. Our only hope is in Jesus Christ, the wisdom of God. And if you come to Him as an unbeliever or even as a believer, turn away from as a fool and come to Him, come to the cross in humility, and He actually takes the fool and makes him wise. Yes. One act of foolishness can undo a lifetime of wisdom. But the good news is, in Jesus and His gospel, the wisdom of God can undo our foolishness by forgiving it, because Jesus has paid for it at the cross. As Christ is the wisdom of God, He laid down His life for the fool. Jesus did what the world's wisdom and strength could never do. He saved us through his cross and through his resurrection. And Christ not only forgives our foolishness, he becomes the wisdom of God for us. See, Jesus actually transforms us. Our words, our decisions, our leadership, our reactions, our priority. He transforms our thinking. He reshapes our desires. He gives us grace to live, speak, love wisely. Christ Jesus, who became to us the wisdom of God, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption. So how do we live in light of this? How do we not undo our life? It's simply a humble dependence on Jesus Christ. We walk in the fear of the Lord, which is the beginning of wisdom. We saturate ourselves in the Word, not just by hearing, but by doing. We run from the folly that once entangled us. We don't entertain folly. We don't tolerate just a little of it. We build our lives wisely, brick by brick, on the solid rock of Jesus Christ. So don't cling to your cleverness, and don't despair in your foolishness. Run and cling to Jesus Christ, and let his atoning work and resurrection wash away your folly. Let him become your wisdom, your righteousness, your holiness, and your redemption. Turn from folly and embrace the Savior and walk in wisdom.
Thank you for listening to sermon audio from Grace Hill Church. Please feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without written permission.